First thing, what I want to do is I just want to ask you, you know, some questions about the new album and some things about the No Nukes. So, and we'll just jump right in here. First off, well, this is the first time you've been on tour in a while.
It's the first time for a number of reasons, Jim. This is my very first solo tour.
Right.
I did like 6 dates solo once in the middle of a Crosby Nash concert, which was in the BC, probably around 71. And since then, I haven't done any solo work at all.
Right. And I read somewhere where you did only 3 dates last year that you were paid for. Is that true?
That's right. The rest were anti-nuke benefits.
Anti-nuke benefits.
Yes.
Well, on the
the
new LP, Earth and Sky, there's 3 tunes that you say were somewhat pointed, being Barrel of Pain, Magical Child, and In the 80s. I was wondering if you could elaborate on each of those tunes.
Yes, Barrel of Pain is a song I wrote about... I found out some information that the Atomic Energy Commission in the late 50s had dropped approximately 60,000 barrels of low-level nuclear waste in steel barrels at the bottom of the ocean. Part of them are off the coast of San Francisco, and part of them are off the coast of Maine. And obviously by now they're rotting. They've been down there for 20-odd years. They've rotted and spilling their poisons into the oceans. And massive cesium levels have already been found in some of the fish that are caught in San Francisco Bay. Listen to this. You want to hear a weird story? The guy that the Atomic Energy Commission subcontracted the gig to in Maine, when he threw the barrels off his boat, they floated, and the Atomic Energy Commission said, "Well, what did you do?" He said, "Oh, it was easy. I just went home. I got my shotgun. I shot them full of holes, and they sank real good." My outrage against that situation is Barrel of Pain. Of a new life, you know, is Magical Child. I wrote that for my first son, Jackson. Susan and I have since had another baby boy called William, who's 10 weeks old right now.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
As I lie beside you, feeling the life that we made with our souls, nothing like this ever happened. Seem to react to a vague memory. This is the way that she said it could be. Having a magical child. As I stand before you, watching the love turn around in my eyes. I've waited for so long for someone to care. I've waited for so long for someone aware. I've waited for so long for someone to share. Having a magical child. Really makes me wonder why I waited for so long to bring another life to this place. And then I finally realized I was watching myself grow up. Can you not see it in this face, your face?
And in the 80s, of course, pretty much speaks for itself, doesn't
it? Yeah, it pretty much does. You know, I know an awful lot of people that are going to work and hating it, you know, and get bombarded into thinking that they are paralyzed as far as action is concerned. I, of course, believe that every individual has the power to change things in his future.
And you feel like that now is the... Well, it's always... The best time is always now, but...
We've got to get it together, Jim, in lots of areas, or else we're going to just almost destroy ourselves.
We won't be around for the 90s, right?
Well, you know, a lot of the scientists that I've talked to have only given us like a 40% chance of making it to the year 2000. And 2000 is only 20-odd years away. I mean, it's just crazy.
Reevaluate ourselves a little bit, don't we? Right. But when you get ready to do a new album, do you go back and take some of the songs that you've written, say, 4 or 5 years ago and maybe shelve them for one reason or the other and take a second look at those tunes?
Yeah, that's very possible. It hasn't happened to me too much. But, yeah, that's what happens. You know, sometimes a song that does not apply now will apply in a couple of years' time.
Right. Well, many of your songs are considered very much classics and are, you know, they're implanted in our minds. Do you still use some of these tunes in the current tour, or you rely mostly on new material, or what?
I do both. You know, I'm always an artist that is looking forward and not backward. To the same extent, I do understand people's love of, let's say, for instance, a song like Our House.
Uh-huh.
Perfect example. How many times can you sing Our House?
You know?
But I realize that it means so much to so many people, but who am I to rob them of that warm feeling when you hear a piece of music that really stirs great memories in you?
Well, do you use an electric or acoustic guitar?
It's beautifully acoustic. I have an acoustic guitar player, Joel Bernstein, and David Kessner,
right,
who is on the keyboard.
How many people in the band total?
Just three of us.
Three piece, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the Muse concert. You're very much involved in the Muse. What is exactly your position with the Muse people?
I'm on the board of directors of the production side of the foundation. There are two sides to the foundation. One that gives the money away, you know, which is made up of 16 activists, 16 anti-nuke people, taken from as many areas of life as possible, black, white, brown, pink, blue, men, women, minorities, you know. And the board B is the actual physical working side of Muse, meaning me, John Hall, Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, and Tom Campbell, and various other people that are responsible for the actual visible momentum of Muse, meaning we put on the concerts, we did the movie, we made the record, you know.
Okay, talk about the record a little bit. That was you guys worked real hard to put the album together in such a short period of time.
Yes, we sure shit did.
Yeah.
Jackson and I stayed up for 7 straight days.
7 days.
Yes, it was very important, and I'll tell you why. Joe Smith, who was the president of Elektra Asylum, took a massive, massive gamble in today's economy.
Right.
When we needed... The Muse record got about $750,000 advance.
Right.
He paid $450,000 of that into our bank account in New York when we desperately needed it to put on the shows, you know, to front the shows in the Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Of course, you don't get paid until all the shows are after.
Right.
But you need massive amounts of money to get people there, to pay people, to, you know, to do all that stuff, you know. So when we needed money, Joe Smith, who I said is the president of Elektra Asylum, put that money into our bank account without any contracts being signed.
Right.
Without really knowing whether they was going to get a record. And, you know, just on faith.
Well, that's really a bold...
And I say, help us out.
Right.
When he did that and turned around and said, do you think there's any chance we could get it out for Christmas to make as much money as possible for the movement and for, you know, and for the company also, although they only get a fourth of what we get.
Right.
When he showed such incredible faith, me and Jackson decided to go all the way to get it out for Christmas, and that's what we did.
Well, that must have been quite a pretty difficult undertaking with as many people and many musicians as you had to deal with.
One of the most difficult albums I've ever been involved with.
Yeah.
Incredible minute details, one of which went wrong, that would scatter on a thousand other decisions. You know?
What about the movie now?
The movie comes out in August.
In August?
It's really excellent. I mean, you know, as exciting audio, you know, on the record as it was, visually it's even more exciting.
Right.
And they're going to be different, there are going to be different pieces of music from each artist in the movie than there were in the, on the record.
Well, with that much music, how does one decide what goes and what does not go onto an album?
Gets a little selfish, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
What would I like if I sat down and put on this record? What would I like, you know?
And also, I read where you wanted it to be an album that someone could pick up 10 years from now.
Yep.
And it would still feel like they were there then, you know?
Right. We had, Jason and I had to create that evening out of 5 evenings.
Right.
And the difficulty was, of course, that, you know, when people mix their stuff and send it in, that they were very incompatible, a lot of the stuff. We had to make it all fit like one show, you know?
Right.
You know, so I didn't jar you out of your seat with a totally different sound coming out of the next track, you know?
Right. Well, with that many people in the studio at one time, you, Jackson Browne, John Hall, Bonnie Raitt, you know, trying to produce an album with that many ideas going across the room, was there ever any tense feelings, or was it something that just, wham, it happened?
It was I try to analyze what the hell went on there, and I can't, I just know that at the end of our great fear was, because we stayed up so long, that maybe our objectiveness would just fly out the window. I mean, how objective can you be staying up for 7 days?
Right.
But I think that between us, and Bonnie wasn't there that much because she had to go on the road.
Right.
Between us, we managed to keep it in good perspective. We have a lot of people that work with us, Stanley Johnston, for instance, and Don Gooch, who keep balance, you know. So we kept checking each other as we went along, make sure that we weren't so tired that we were making silly decisions.
Yeah, so you were really happy with the album, right?
I was happy with the album. There are a couple of things I would have done differently in hindsight, you know.
Uh-huh.
We tried for 2 days to mix Peter Tosh's thing, for instance.
Right.
And it just never happened. We sent the tapes, we had them hand carried to Jamaica, and they came back, you know, like no one could find Peter or his manager, you know, and there was no way that we could, mix his stuff and put it on. So there were things on that we'd like to have put on that weren't on, you know.
Well, it's certainly something that all involved can for sure be proud of. Finally, I'd like for you just to express your feelings just a little bit on nuclear energy, nuclear power.
Well, to me, Jim, it's the gravest danger that humanity faces, and it's the best-kept secret. It's dangerous of the best-kept secret, you know. The really weird thing about it is that its main defense is its invisibility. You can't see it or touch it or smell it or taste it.
Right.
For instance, if 2,000 people would have dropped dead after Three Mile Island, I'm sure that there wouldn't be a nuclear power plant in operation today. But they're going to die over the next 20 years, you know, and it's very hard to pinpoint a death with something that happened 20 years earlier.
Right.
You know. So that's part of its demonic effectiveness, is its invisibility. I believe that the American people should take note of what's going on, should listen to the scientists and listen to the concerned people, investigate, find out the pros and cons, and when you find out the pros and cons of the dangers of nuclear power, there's only one rational decision that any rational human being could come to, and that is totally stupid. Because nuclear power, at the industry's figures, only pumps 12% of electricity into the national grid, and it uses 3% of that to keep itself going.
Right.
To keep some of the waste cool, to operate the plant itself. So when you're talking about 9%, and you also know the fact that Americans as a society waste exactly 50% of the energy that they use a year, you can tell that with a little thoughtful conservation, we could phase out nuclear power.
Right.
Now, I would shut them down all immediately, today, right now. I think that's naive. I think that is pie in the sky, you know.
Right.
I think that, because you can't tell anybody in Chicago that's freezing their ass off in the winter to shut nuclear power down when that area depends 60% on nuclear power, right?
Right.
But I think that with conservation and some thought and some dollars into alternative energy, you know, I think that we could make it through a very dangerous transition here.
Right.
Because if we keep continually being forced down this path for the quest for a corporate dollar, we will end up, you know, all with five heads. I mean, that sounds really ridiculous, but I've talked to scientists that have told me about genetic damage with the DNA structure that is totally scary. And, what's happening is I don't particularly care about me or our friends, you know. I mean, we've had a good life, you know.
Right, I agree.
38 years old, I mean, if we drop dead tomorrow, so what, you know. But, I mean, my children, I'm standing here looking at my two-year-old son right now and thinking what his future's going to be like, and what about his kids, and what about his children's children? When plutonium has a half-life of 24,000 years and you have to keep those waste products stable for 600 generations, we don't stand a chance, man. We can't even keep president in power for 8 years.
That's true. Well, it's certainly nice to see musicians such as yourself, you know, taking a stand against things that you do believe in. And as you've always done in the past, you know, that's something that we could always depend on Graham Nash to do, was to come out and, you know, speak his mind on things. And it's certainly nice to see you doing it now.
Sometimes I wonder, Jim, whether I have the right to say anything. But
certainly, sure you do.
As a human being, and as a father, I have every right.
Well, listen, we're certainly looking forward to the show tonight, and it's in the main auditorium on the campus, and it's a very nice place, and we're certainly looking forward to listening to you tonight.
There'll be some really fine music.
Okay. Thank you, Graham.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.